Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
What is happening, guys? It is time to break down UFC 299, and I've been really excited for this card for quite some time. We've got a handful of really good pay-per-views coming up, UFC 299, then of course, UFC 300, so some really strong cards. I've built out lineups using the Sims tool at stochastic.com. I've got some bets that I've placed. We're going to break it all down here, going through all the fights and also showing you guys what my fighter exposures are in the Sims tool as of right now. So do me a favor as you watch this video. Like the video, subscribe, and if you want to sign up for our Sims tool over at stochastic.com, there's links below in the description box to sign up. And if you haven't signed up now, what are you waiting for? It has been a great year. I've won the $3 a handful of times this year. Last week, didn't come in first, but did have a really good slate, primarily because Ludovic Klein was my most rostered fighter, and he was the highest scorer by a pretty good margin. He was really good pivot off of fighters like Muhammad Mukhaev and Umar Nurmagomedov, who were more popular and didn't score nearly as many fantasy points. So if you guys want to sign up, use that link below to sign up. You could build lineups on our site. You could also simulate the slate. And then, of course, you get things like fighter projections, ownership projections, and all that. And also, I want to do a giveaway for this card. Leave a comment below and let me know which fighter you guys think scores the most fantasy points that's priced under 8,900. So anybody underneath Benoit Saint-Denis, and whoever ends up getting the right answer, I'm going to group them together and I'll give one of those people a free subscription to Oddshop or our betting site. So just leave a comment below which fighter priced below 8,900 you think scores the most fantasy points. And if you get the right answer, chance to win a free subscription. So no risk to you at all. Hope you guys take advantage of that. But let's go ahead and start getting into the slate, beginning with the main event. Sean O'Malley taking on Chito Vera. And it's funny, as much as I love this card, this is one of the only fights that I'm not super looking forward to. Like, it's fine. I don't have a massive issue with it or anything. It's just, you can't convince me that these are the two best bantamweights in the world. And in fact, I don't even think these are two of the best bantamweights in the world. I wouldn't favor Sean O'Malley or Chito Vera against Umar Nurmagomedov. I wouldn't favor them against Corey Sandhagen. I wouldn't favor them against Merab Dvalishvili. I wouldn't favor them against Peter Yan. So I actually think Peter Yan is probably the best bantamweight that's on this particular card, and he's not even fighting in the main event, which is a title fight. And then also, as far as fantasy purposes go, it's not my favorite five-round fight to target either. I'm going to pick Sean O'Malley to win. I think he's pretty significant minute winning advantages. He lands 7.25 significant strikes per minute. Chito Vera only lands 4.37. Also, Chito absorbs much worse significant strikes per minute. And the other issue with Chito as well is he's not a round winner, and he's a very slow starter. Often, Chito gives away the first one or two rounds in his fights, and he builds into them as he goes. So it's a problem with Chito Vera and why it is that he struggled to win some of these five-round fights unless he gets a finish. And then also when it comes to Chito Vera, he is very, very difficult to hurt. He's difficult to put away. We've never seen him finish before. We've never seen him knock down. And we've seen him take massive amounts of punishment in some of his fights. Like the Rob Font fight, Chito absorbed 271 significant strikes. He did not have a mark on him at the end of the fight. So it's stuff like that that it makes me really hard to believe that Sean O'Malley is going to be able to finish Chito Vera. And considering how much finishing upside there is around this price range where we've got fighters like Despagne, we've got Benoit Saint-Denis priced right below Sean O'Malley, it's hard for me to want to load up on the main event in the way that I typically would on a lot of these cards. So if you look at the current exposures I have here, I'm getting myself to 25% Sean O'Malley right now, 28% Chito Vera. So even though I'm picking O'Malley to win, the reason I'm getting to slightly more exposure to Chito is because if Chito wins, he's pretty much a lock to be in the winning lineup. If O'Malley wins, not only does he have to win, he probably needs a finish and he has to outscore all the other fighters priced around him to be in the optimal lineup, which I do think is a little bit of a tall order. And right now we do have O'Malley projected for 27% ownership. We got Chito projected for 20%. This is ownership, which is always going to be very math-based. And just because of the name value of O'Malley, I wouldn't be surprised if he actually ends up coming in closer to 40% owned than the around 30% we have. So I do expect myself to be a little bit underweight to O'Malley, a little bit overweight to Chito, even though I am picking O'Malley to win. picking to win by decision. If he does happen to finish Chito Vera, it would be the biggest achievement of Sean O'Malley's career, because Chito Vera is very, very difficult to hurt and put away. So picking O'Malley to win, but not my favorite fight to target on the card overall. My favorite fight to target is the co-main event, which is going to be a five-round fight between Dustin Poirier and Benoit Saint-Denis. And I'm not exactly sure what Poirier's motive was for taking this fight. He's given some kind of odd interviews leading up to the fight where he said, I just want to know things along the lines of, I just want to know that I still have that dog in me to take on an up-and-comer. He's also mentioned retirement a few times. So certainly some sort of hesitancy for me to really be confident in Dustin Poirier, considering where I'm just not sure where he's at in his career. He's 35 years old. He's been in a ton of big fights. He's made a bunch of money. I have to think that Benoit Saint-Denis is going to be the hungrier fighter in this spot. I'm not going to totally write off Dustin Poirier, but if you look at my current exposures here, and once again, keep in mind, five-round fight, Benoit Saint-Denis is my highest exposed fighter on the entire card. He's in nearly 60% of my lineups. I'm also getting myself to Dustin Poirier being in the five-round fight, and he's expected to be fairly low-owned as well, only 23% ownership. So I'm a little bit overweight to Poirier, but for sure my preferred side of this fight is Benoit Saint-Denis, because I think he has the style that could overwhelm Dustin Poirier in a way that we've seen him beaten multiple times. Dustin Poirier only has a 63% takedown defense on paper. Saint-Denis does land 4.55 takedowns per 15 minutes. He's a very, very aggressive both wrestler and striker, also landing 5.53 significant strikes per minute.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
And if you look at some of the fights that Poirier's been in, he was taken down three times by Michael Chandler, and it was a fight that Poirier came back from behind to win by a third-round submission, but it was definitely concerning that Chandler was able to take him down three times. And what ultimately ended up happening is Michael Chandler just has not great cardio, so Chandler tired himself out wrestling in that fight. But there's also been other times, even though Charles Oliveira didn't actually take down Dustin Poirier, he was able to get himself to top control, and then he was just able to dominate Poirier on the mount in the mount. When he was able to get in advantageous positions. We also saw Dan Hooker took down Poirier four times. I kind of write off the Khabib fight because, sure, Khabib took down Poirier seven times and finished him, but Khabib did that to just about everybody. But the ones that are most concerned to me, Dan Hooker taking him down four times, all the control time that Charles Oliveira had, as well as the three takedowns from Michael Chandler. So if Benoit Saint-Denis comes out with a very wrestling-heavy game plan, I think that he should have a lot of success. And also, potentially score a ton of fantasy points on DraftKings. So Dustin Poirier, for the low ownership, I think that he's a viable leverage play, but my much preferred side of the other five-round fight that we have here is going to be Benoit Saint-Denis. Kevin Holland taking on Michael Venom Page. Michael Venom Page making his UFC debut, coming over from Bellator. And this is a fight that Kevin Holland should win easily. Here's the problem. Kevin Holland does not fight to win fights. I mean, he doesn't try to lose or anything like that, but he fights to put on the most entertaining fights possible. And that often means, especially recently, that he gets away from his most advantageous ways to win fights. So if we look at some of the fights that we've gotten out of Kevin Holland recently, he fought against Jack Della Maddalena in his last fight. It was competitive, ended up losing a split decision, but he had a massive grappling advantage in that fight, doesn't land any takedowns, which is not something that's uncommon for Kevin Holland. Did attempt a couple of them, so that's at least somewhat positive to see, but didn't land any takedowns. And I think he could have been more aggressive looking for the wrestling. The fight that really stands out to me, though, the one against Stephen Wonderboy Thompson, where Kevin Holland had a massive wrestling and grappling advantage in that fight, and he just never really went to it. There was a couple times he reactionary shot takedowns after getting hurt and was able to land those. But then what happened? He got in the top control time and then just stood up, walked away, laughed about, and was like, come on, we're not wrestling or grappling in this fight. We're trying to do the man dance. We're trying to punch each other in the face. And that's where I look at the fight against Michael Venom Page and just get concerned, because if Kevin Holland was to wrestle and grapple in this fight, I think he would submit Michael Venom Page fairly easily, but it's hard for me to buy into that's what Kevin Holland's game plan is going to be. So what I think ends up happening is these guys are going to have a kickboxing fight on the feet. It's going to be fairly competitive. And I question how well it's going to score on DraftKings because Michael Venom Page is fairly durable. Kevin Holland is also super, super durable. I mean, we've seen Kevin Holland in a bunch of wars on the feet, and he's proven to be very, very difficult to hurt and put away. The only time we've really saw him TKO'd was in the fight against Stephen Wonderboy Thompson, but that was a fight where Kevin Holland broke his hand, wasn't able to come back out for the fifth round, so he was stopped in between rounds. So here's why I think the fight plays out against Michael Venom Page. I think Kevin Holland should shoot takedowns. I don't think he's going to. So it's going to be a competitive decision on the feet that I don't expect to score all that well for DraftKings purposes. So one that I'm not going to have interest in. I did strongly consider Kevin Holland plus 700 by submission just because, I think that's what happens if he shoots takedowns. But I just can't project it from him considering how his recent fights have played out. Gilbert Burns against Jack Della Maddalena. This is another pretty good fight to target for DraftKings purposes. It is a striker versus grappler matchup. That's not to say that Gilbert Burns can't strike, but he has massive advantages should this fight end up going to the ground. And that's why if we look at my current exposures here, I'm overweight to Gilbert Burns. He's in 29% of my lineups. I'm a little bit underweight to Jack Della Maddalena. We have him projected for 33% ownership, and I have him in 20% of my lineups. So when it comes to this fight, the one that stands out the most to me about these fighters' previous fights that really made me want to get to Gilbert Burns for DFS purposes, Jack Della Maddalena's fight against Basil Hafez. And Hafez, who is just booked in a fight against Mickey Gall for UFC 303, I think it is. So when you look at this fight, Basil Hafez took it on about a week's notice. So not super prepared, or at least not as prepared as he could have been for this fight, whereas Jack Della Maddalena was training for a previous fight and got to take on Hafez on short notice. Hafez shot a ton of takedowns, only landed 3 out of 20, but was really concerning to me about JDM in that fight is, number one, he pulled guard a couple of times, which is super weird. But then on top of that, also, once Hafez got top control time, he was able to really control Jack Della Maddalena. And for nearly half the fight, he ended up getting control time, 6 minutes and 48 seconds of control time in a 15-minute fight. So Basil Hafez doesn't have the best submission skills. So he was able to get himself some control time, but wasn't able to finish JDM in that fight. But if we see Gilbert Burns get top control time against Jack Della Maddalena, I expect Gilbert Burns to submit him. And that is a spot that I like betting. Gilbert Burns plus 380 to win by submission. I think that's his win condition. And Gilbert Burns is likely going to hunt for takedowns. Lands 1.95 per 15 minutes. I know that JDM does have 82% takedown defense on paper. That is boosted a little bit by the matchup against Hafez, where Hafez took it on short notice and attempted 20 takedowns. But another part of it, too, is that JDM has not fought the most prolific wrestlers. Like, we've seen him go up against Kevin Holland, Randy Brown, Danny Roberts. Ramazan Ameev is a takedown threat, landed a takedown, but then it got back to the feet, and we saw JDM finish him there. So that's the big thing about this spot, is that this is going to be the most difficult grappling matchup that JDM has seen. If there was just a couple of years younger on the Gilbert Burns side, I would be a little bit more confident really loading up on him on DFS at this price point. But considering that Gilbert Burns is 37 years old and I do have some concerns about his durability, I'm going to be overweight to him. But that's why I landed on the 29% mark on Gilbert Burns and wasn't like 40 or 50% exposed. But I'm going to pick Gilbert Burns to win. I'm going to pick him to win by submission. He's definitely one of the live underdogs for this card.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Moving on, Piotr Jan taking on Song Yadong, and another fight I'm not super interested for DFS purposes. It's expected to be fairly popular if we look at our projected ownerships here. We've got, Song Yadong projected for right around 20% ownership, same with Piotr Jan, and this is another fight where I think it's going to take place on the feet. It's mostly going to be striking-based. I don't think either of these fighters are going to be looking to attempt takedowns against each other. and it's going to be fairly competitive on the feet. I do favor Jan to win, and with this fight being a pick'em, I bet Jan on the money line. The best available line at the time that I'm recording this is Jan minus 125. So I got a little bit of line value. I posted in our Discord channel him at minus 118 earlier in the week. Minus 125, certainly playable. I would bet Jan anywhere up to about minus 150 in this spot. And I think that there's a little bit of recency bias against Piotr Jan because of his recent losses. But if we review these, are they really that bad of losses? He lost a five-round fight to Merab Dvalishvili, but Merab might be close to unbeatable in a five-round fight. He is just proven to be an absolute wrecking ball. And once you get into those five-round scenarios with him, his crazy cardio, I just don't think I could pick anybody to beat Merab. So we've got the title fight, right, where it's Sean O'Malley against Chito Vera. I would strongly favor Merab against each of those guys. So sure, Jan lost that fight, but Song Yadong would lose to Merab as well, in my opinion. Piotr Jan fought against Sean O'Malley, and it was a fight where O'Malley wins by split decision. I don't think it was a robbery, but I did think Jan won the fight 29-28. I didn't think it was outlandish to score the fight for Sugar Sean O'Malley, but still, I thought Jan ended up winning the fight. It goes on his loss as a record, and it contributes to some of the recency bias. Another competitive split decision loss against Aljamain Sterling, another very tough fight there. But it's not like Jan looked terrible in that spot. He just lost a close decision against a championship caliber fighter. A great win for Piotr Jan against Corey Sandhagen for the then interim belt at the time. And then the other loss on his record here to Aljamain Sterling in their first match. I mean, what happened in that fight? The tide was turning where Sterling won the early round. I think he won like the first round and a half. First round was for sure for Aljamain Sterling. The second round was competitive. I scored it for Jan. It could have gone either way. But the tide was clearly starting to turn. Jan wins the third round. He's winning the fourth round, then just lands a terrible, ill-advised, illegal knee that ends up ending the fight, but it ends up being a loss for Jan. So four of his last five fights are losses on paper. So that makes people kind of say like, hey, maybe Piotr Jan is washed. I don't think that's the case. And also overall, you look at the metrics here. I do think he's going to be more aggressive on the feet. He lands 5.03 significant strikes per minute. Like I said, I don't expect there to be takedowns attempted, but if there is takedowns on one side, I think it's more likely to be on the Jan side than the Yadong side. So I'm picking Jan to win, but not a fight I really love for DFS purposes. I'm going to be underweight to both sides. I don't think there's going to be a finish, and I don't think there's going to be very many takedowns. I think it's going to be a moderately scored fight that takes place on the feet. Picking Jan to win, betting him, not as much a fight to target for DFS. A great fight to target in the mid-range, Curtis Blaydes against Gilton Almeida, and Almeida is expected to be uber chalky on this card. Our current projected ownerships, we have Gilton Almeida projected for 41% ownership. It's one of the highest marks of anybody on the card. And then we've got Curtis Blaydes at 29% projected ownership. And this fight is right around a pick'em right now. We've got Gilton Almeida about minus 120. And then we've got the comeback on Curtis Blaydes right around like minus 110 at the moment. And it's a very competitive fight. I actually think this is a little bit more favorable matchup for Curtis Blaydes than a lot of people are making it out to be, because I think Blaydes has the advantage everywhere but the grappling. Because if this fight does get to the ground and Gilton Almeida gets top position, I think he probably either pounds out Curtis Blaydes or more likely ends up submitting Curtis Blaydes from that spot. But the problem is, will he be able to land takedowns? Because Curtis Blaydes is one of the best wrestlers that we have in the heavyweight division. He's going to be the bigger fighter of the two as well. He's a little bit taller at 6'4". He's also got a little bit of a reach advantage. But the other thing too is, Curtis Blaydes is a natural heavyweight, whereas Gilton Almeida is actually a light heavyweight who's fighting up at heavyweight just because he realized that he has an athleticism advantage over just about every heavyweight. So Almeida looked at the landscape of the light heavyweight division, the heavyweight division, and said, I think I could get to the belt much easier at the heavyweight division. So he's fighting there, even though he is a little bit undersized for the division. Something else as well, these two fighters are basically the exact same age. Blaydes is kind of thought of as an older fighter because he's been around for a minute and he's fought against some of the top competition. But still, these guys are the same age. So Curtis Blaydes, some people are considering him a little bit washed because of the amount of times he's been finished. And his chin is certainly a little bit of a concern. But the fighters he's been finished by, Sergey Pavlovich, Derek Lewis, and then as well as Francis Ngannou a couple of times, these are killers, right? These are some of the hardest punchers in the history of the UFC. So no shame in getting finished by any of those guys. And I don't really view Gilton Almeida as having that kind of power. In fact, we haven't seen Almeida strike really at all in the UFC. He's kind of been afraid to mix it up on the feet with most heavyweights. So the way that Almeida fights start is he's immediately shooting for takedowns the second that rounds start. And maybe he is just too athletic for Curtis Blaydes, too fast. Maybe that will enable him to get takedowns. But if Curtis Blades' takedown defense is able to hold up, I think he's a lot of success on the feet against Chael Sonnen Almeida, potentially finishes him as well. So great fight to target. It's going to be very competitive. I lean a little bit towards the Blades side for DFS just because of the difference in ownership. Once again, Curtis Blades projected for sub 30% ownership. Almeida projected for north of 40% ownership. The only fighter that we've projected for more ownership on this card is Benoit Saint-Denis. So give me Curtis Blades for a little bit of leverage. I'm going to pick him to win by KO. Good fight to target both sides, but I'm going to be, once again, a little bit heavier on Blades for the leverage purposes.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Next fight here to talk about, Caitlin Sermonera. So this is Caitlin Chookagian. She got married. Her last name changed. Although with that said, Aaron Bronstedt reported that she still wants to go by Caitlin Chookagian as a fighter. So Caitlin Chookagian, I'll call her that since that's what she wants to be called. Taking on Macy Barber. And historically, neither of these fighters score all that well for DraftKings purposes. Macy Barber, part of her real issue as a DraftKings scorer is that she generally starts fairly slow in her fights. And then when she has a real sense of urgency, if she's getting behind in fights, then she starts to really kick it into gear and starts to become more aggressive. So we saw that in the fight against Andrea Lee, where Macy Barber struggled early and then needed to rally a comeback. I thought that she lost the fight, but ultimately judges scored that fight for Andrea Lee. We saw something similar as well in the fights against Miranda Maverick and the fight against Alexa Grasso. She was behind on the scorecards early in the fight, and then she got really aggressive in the later stages. And ultimately, it just leads to a lot of lackluster fantasy scores. You guys will see by looking at the numbers here, Macy Barber in her last fight against Amanda Ribas landed 81 significant strikes. That's the highest mark of her UFC career. She did land 112 on the Contender Series, but in her actual fights in the UFC, we typically see her land like 40 to 50 significant strikes. Maybe she lands a takedown or two, and she's in very close decisions that could go either way. Lots of splits. And then as far as Caitlin Chookagian goes, she's another fighter who's a very good minutes winner, but not a great DraftKings score. She doesn't land takedowns, only 0.27 per 15 minutes. She doesn't defend takedowns well either, 54%. So that is a path to victory for Macy Barber. But even if Barber does land some takedowns in this fight, there's so many high-end fighters that have massive scoring potential that it's really hard for me to get to either side of this fight. So I'm going to pick Barber to win by decision, but another spot that I don't really think we need to be looking at for DFS purposes, especially when you consider there's 14 fights on this card, a lot of spots to choose from. And more so than targeting individual fighters, I'm looking at individual fights that I think have a lot of finishing equity or fights that I'm going to be played out at a really fast pace where the winner should score really well. So that's where more so I'm looking at, like, hey, I want to target Blades Almeida. I want to target Burns Jack Della Maddalena. I want to target Dustin Poirier, Benoit Saint-Denis. And that could write off a bunch of fights, kind of like the Barber and Chookagian fight. And the next fight here, Matush Gamrot taking on Rafael Dos Anjos. And this is a matchup just tailor-made for Gamrot because we've seen RDA lose this kind of fight over and over throughout the course of his career. When he fights somebody who could really implement a wrestling heavy game plan, they end up breaking RDA and have a lot of success. We saw Vicente Luque do it, which was a big red flag for me in RDA's last fight. He gave up 8 takedowns to Vicente Luque, who's not really known as a wrestler. We've also seen RDA in this spot against similar sorts of fighters. Michael Chiesa landed 6 takedowns against him. We saw Kevin Lee land 6 takedowns against RDA. Leon Edwards landed 3. Colby Covington landed 7. Kamaru Usman landed 12. By the way, RDA, talk about a badass. Look at the strength of schedule this guy has fought. The Brian Barberena fight notwithstanding. Vicente Luque, Rafael Fiziev, Hinato Moicano, Paul Felder, Michael Chiesa, Leon Edwards, Kevin Lee, Usman, Covington, Lawler, Magny, Safadin, Eddie Alvarez. Remember, Eddie Alvarez was the champion. He beat RDA to get the lightweight belt. Tony Ferguson, Donald Cerrone. So RDA has fought one of the most difficult strengths of schedule you'll ever see. He's 39 years old and he's still going, but the Luque fight was really a sign to me that he's starting to slow down. And when you consider that he's a career 56% takedown defense, he's going up against Gamrot, who lands 4.36 takedowns for 15 minutes. I think this is a tailor-made matchup for Gamrot to not only win, but score a bunch of DraftKings points by just rinse and repeat takedowns, maybe even wearing out RDA and submitting him towards the tail end of the fight. So Gamrot's one of my favorite contrarian plays on the card. He's only projected for 16% ownership. The field's looking to go elsewhere when they're spending up to save their money. And this is also a spot where if I'm not going to be super high on getting to a ton of O'Malley exposure, this is where I could get to somebody like a Gamrot at 16% ownership and differentiate some lineups by being a little bit lighter on the main event than the field. So Gamrot, one of my favorite contrarian plays on the slate, kind of akin to what I did last week with Ludovic Klein, where the field was going to fighters like Umar Nurmagomedov. The field was going to fighters like Muhammad Mokaev. And I thought there was comparable upside, if not more upside, in Ludovic Klein at much lower ownership. That's what Gamrot is for me this week. So picking him to win and somebody I'm going to be very overweight to for DFS purposes. Another fight here that I'm not all that interested in. Pedro Munhoz against Kyler Phillips. Munhoz, another fighter who's definitely on the aging side. I mean, 37 years old at 135 pounds. It's just a tough weight class to be at that age because speed matters so much and you lose a step once you get to that age. And Pedro Munhoz, he does land 5.45 significant strikes per his career, but those numbers have started to dip a little bit in recent spots. And then also not a great minutes winner because he does absorb a lot of significant strikes, 6.14. I think this is a spot where he could see Kyler Phillips win without a ton of activity. Well, he does land 5.36 significant strikes per his career. A lot of those have come because he's had some impressive early finishes. He's had a lot of output in early rounds of fights, but questionable cardio on the side of Kyler Phillips, where we have seen him start to slow down and fatigue in the later second round, third round of some of his fights. So with that in mind, I'm going to pick Kyler Phillips to win by decision. Pedro Munhoz, maybe his chin could be compromised because of his age, but to this point, he's just been cast iron as far as the chin goes. The only reason he doesn't have the best chin on this card is because Chito Vera probably is the best chin in all of the UFC, and he's also on this card. So I'm going to pick Kyler Phillips to win, and picking him to win by decision, not a great fight to target for DFS purposes, though, in my opinion. Moving on, a few fights left to talk about. This one between Ion Cutelaba and Felipe Lins. This is a fight that I think is a great fight for DFS purposes because of the fighting style of Cutelaba, who only has about a round of cardio, but he is so aware of it that he goes balls to the wall for the first 5 minutes of the fight. What ends up happening is either gets his opponent out of there in the first 5 minutes or he doesn't. And he just totally falls off a cliff. And then he typically gets finished in the second or third round. So the output on Cutelaba is crazy. He lands 4.75 takedowns per 15 minutes, 4.63 significant strikes per minute. And I don't think Lins could keep up with the early onslaught that we're going to see out of Cutelaba. So I'm picking Cutelaba to win in round one. It could be by submission. It could be by ground and pound. I have 57% exposure to Cutelaba. We don't even project to be all that popular either. I think this fight is getting slept on. 23% projected ownership to Cutelaba, 24% on the Lins side. I'm overweight to each of them because if Cutelaba doesn't get that early finish, then I think Lins is going to end up winning in the second or third round himself. But Cutelaba, 57% of my lineups, I think he's a great GPP target and another fighter here for modest ownership that I'm able to get overweight to. So a little bit more contrarian for me on this card other than rostering a lot of Benoit Saint-Denis, but got a lot of Gamrot. I've got a lot of Cutelaba. I've got Curtis Blaydes as a leverage play here. So hopefully I'm able to hit on some of these leverage spots because I'm building lineups quite different from the field this week.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
Moving on, we've got Michel Pereira against Mikhail Olashechuk. And I don't really know what to make of this fight. I'll be honest, I don't have a great read on it. So I'm just kind of even with the field right now. I have right around 20% of each of them. We've got, Olashechuk project for 22.1% ownership. He's in 22% of my lineups. And then as far as Pereira goes, he is in 19% of my lineups at 22% projected ownership. There's a very big grappling advantage for Michel Pereira, but this guy fights like an idiot. I mean, Kevin Holland has one of the lowest fight IQs in the UFC, but it's kind of by design. Like he's fighting for a particular reason, Kevin Holland. He's trying to fight to maximize his paychecks by being entertaining. Michel Pereira is also very entertaining, but it's like he's entertaining by like breakdancing coming into the octagon. And then halfway through the first round, he's totally gassed out because he spent the last 8 minutes dancing on his way to the cage with music playing and whatnot. And he's also fairly expensive at $8,700 on this slate. So if Pereira is able to land takedowns, I think he could potentially submit Oleschaychuk. The problem is that Oleschaychuk typically is pretty sturdy grappling defense. He does struggle to defend takedowns. We saw him taken down 3 times by Caio Bahio. We saw him taken down 3 times by Cody Brundage. And then it was a fight that Oleschaychuk came back and ended up winning. But oftentimes it takes these fighters multiple takedowns before you're able to really wear out Mikhail Oleschaychuk, because he gets taken down, he gets up, he gets taken down, he gets up, and then eventually fighters end up submitting him. So we saw, Ovin St. Preux was able to submit him in the second round. That was only on one takedown. Jimmy Crute was able to submit him, but that was after landing 8 takedowns. Cody Brundage got knocked out after landing 3 takedowns. Caio Bahio also submitted Mikhail Oleschaychuk, but also he had to take him down 3 times for it to happen. Considering the cardio issues that Pereira has had, especially considering that he just tires himself out by doing flips and breakdancing on the way to the octagon, I don't know that he's going to be able to wrestle at the same pace that some of these other fighters do. So I'm going to pick Pereira to win just because I think he has more avenues to win the fight, but it's just not one that I'm super confident in. And there's a lot of other fights that either better reads on or I'm more confident are going to be high scoring. So just right around 20% exposure for each of these fighters for me. Robles Despaigne taking on Josh Parisian. Have you guys seen the size of Despaigne? 6'7", massive heavyweight, 84-inch reach. That is the biggest reach in the history of the UFC, if I'm not mistaken here, on the Despaigne side. He's going to have a massive athleticism advantage over Josh Parisian. The one question you have to have here, and I'll go to the topology page here, actually, of Despaigne while I'm talking to show this to you guys. Let's type in Despaigne, topology, is there's just such little data that we have on Despaigne, and you guys will see why in a second as we go through his history here. So here is his overall MMA fighting career. His debut, his first ever fight, he wins by a first round finish, knockout in 4 minutes and 54 seconds. But here is his follow-up 3 fights. Wins in 12 seconds, wins in 3 seconds, wins in 4 seconds. His last 2 fights, he has won by KO in a total of 7 seconds. And the fight before that, he won in 12 seconds. So there's so little data on Despaigne that all we really know is that he is a crazy gifted athlete with massive power, and Josh Parisian is just a very low-end, bottom-of-the-barrel heavyweight in the UFC. So I really like Despaigne for DFS purposes. Also, is projected for a fairly modest 24% ownership, because how can you not think that there's upside in a fighter who's won his last 3 fights all in less than 15 seconds? His last 3 fights have taken a total of less than 30 seconds. So there's a massive early finishing upside for Despaigne. I guess you can make a case for Parisian as a punt play just because we haven't seen Despaigne out of the first round. What happens if Parisian is able to push Despaigne up against the cage? Maybe he's able to wear on his cardio, but I think this is a fight where, and Despaigne is not young either. He is 35 years old. So I think the UFC would like to fast track Despaigne just to see if he's somebody who maybe they could build up and make into somebody who could be a really dynamic sort of contender just based on his athleticism. At 35 years old, it's probably not in the cards, but I'm very interested to see him. I'm going to pick him to win by first round finish. Definitely a good pay-up option with a lot of upside. Couple more fights to talk about. CJ Vergara against Asu Almabayev. And CJ Vergara was the only fighter on the slate that missed weight. He weighed in at 127 pounds. And then when he went to re-weigh in, he once again weighed in at 127 pounds. So he's going to be docked part of his pay. CJ Vergara is a fighter who I'm just not all that impressed with. He doesn't have the best grappling defense. He is mediocre 74% takedown defense as well. And that's the path to victory for Asu Almabayev, who we already saw beat Ode Osborne in his UFC debut, which that's a very impressive win for your first ever UFC fight. And this is a step down in competition as well, in my opinion, for Almabayev, because he's going from Ode Osborne, who's a really gifted athlete and a really dynamic striker, to CJ Vergara, who just doesn't really offer all that much, and I don't even think belongs at the UFC level. So Almabayev is another pay-up option that we could certainly be getting to on this card. I currently have him in, let's see, just 11% of lineups. And the reason that I'm a little bit underweight here to Almabayev isn't because I don't favor him to win. I certainly do. I'm picking to win, picking him to win by submission. It's just I would rather pay up for some of these other high-end fighters that are lower owned, that have comparable upside. So Almabayev, good fighter to be getting to, picking him to win. Just going to be a little bit underweight to the field to him and favoring lower owned fighters like Despaigne and like Gamrot. If our projections update tomorrow and maybe like Despaigne is projected for a lot more ownership, maybe I'll come down a little bit on Despaigne and get myself to a little bit more Almabayev. But as of right now, I'm a little bit heavier on other payoff options. Last fight to talk about on the slate, and this is one that I have very minimal interest in. Joanne Wood against Marina Moroz. This is a retirement fight for Joanne Wood. And she's somebody who I used to be pretty high on for DFS purposes, just because she lands 6.93 significant strikes per minute. She lands 1.57 takedowns. So historically a pretty good DraftKings score, but she's 38. She turns 39 this year. She's already said she's retiring after this fight, which really makes you question what her motivation is heading into this fight. Is she just getting one final paycheck? And then also she's already lost to Marina Moroz once. We saw these two fight a while ago, it was many years ago, and Moroz ended up winning that fight by submission. That was back in 2015. So yeah, it took place, you know, nearly 9 years ago at this point, but I don't really think it's going to play out all that differently. On the feet, Wood would definitely have some advantages, but at some point I think this gets to the mat and then Moroz is going to probably be able to hold top control time, maybe submit Joanne Wood as well. But considering the price point on Moroz and how many payup options they're on the slate to get to, it's going to be hard for me to get there. If I had to play one side, it's going to be Wood just because of the cheaper price point. But there's no reason to think this is a fight that we need a target for DraftKings this week. So that's going to wrap it up and do it for me. If you guys have not done it, like the video, subscribe to the YouTube channel. Don't forget, leave a comment below. Which fighter priced below $8,900 do you think scores the most fantasy points this weekend? If you guys have the right answer, I'm going to pick one person at random that gets correct. And I'll give you a free subscription to Odd Shopper. So take a quick part in that giveaway because it's going to help me in the YouTube algorithm, as does liking the video, subscribing to the YouTube channel, and you can win some free stuff for yourself. So that's going to do it for me this weekend, guys. I'm really excited for UFC 299. Good luck, and see you back here next week.